Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair every month or so, and we welcome Gordon Fricke when we do that, and we do that today. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke in Hoosick Falls, New York. He's been in the automotive repair and service game for over 30 years, probably longer than that now.
Stop counting, Ray. Come on, it makes me look old.
60, 70 years, I don't know. And Gordon's always a great guest and a popular one. It's best to call now with your questions about your car or truck. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Or, let's see, what else? Social media, Ray. Oh, yeah, Facebook. Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. There should be a Vox Pop post there, or you can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop. But again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, you are not alone today.
Well, I have a special guest.
Really?
My youngest daughter, Hannah, decided to come along.
Oh, well, step up to the microphone, Hannah. I know you didn't want to talk, but you know what? We'll have you on the show. Welcome to Vox Pop. Nice to have you
Thank
here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you have a driver's license, presumably?
I do.
Yeah? And how many accidents?
None.
Really?
None.
Gordon, she a good driver?
Yes, she really is.
Really?
Yeah.
And you've trained her well? Always leaving out? Get the big picture? What are those things?
Yeah, we just talked about that. When we were getting ready for her driver's test, we were practice driving all over the place.
Yeah.
And I just remembered all the places we had to go, and they were ice cream related, frozen yogurt.
Sure.
Panera Bread, 16 Handles, all these places we just had to go to. But it was a lot of fun.
Well, that's a good way, actually, to, you know, if we don't die in an accident, you'll get a prize.
We'll have an ice cream.
Yeah, yeah, that works out really well.
And it worked.
My father taught me to drive hundreds of years ago, and the first day we drove out in the country, and then he said, okay, drive this direction. I ended up at the corner of Wolf Road and Central Ave in traffic, massive traffic.
That's not where you want to
be. What are you doing to me? And, well, it worked out all right,
yeah.
Except for my first driver's test. I was doing fine until parallel parking when I nudged the car that I was parking in front of.
Well, we had some
Instant
anxiety
fail.
Over parallel parking the first time.
Well, you won't have to worry. I mean, some of the cars now will do it for you.
Yeah, just let go and let it do it.
I don't like that.
Nah.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Are all your friends, Hannah, are they texting and driving and doing, Snapchat and whatnot while they're driving along?
Some of them do.
That's ridiculous. Do you tell them not to?
I usually tell them not to. I don't like to be in cars when people are texting or driving.
It's very unsafe.
Yeah.
I mean, all you have to do is look down for a second, and that's it.
And you see so many people doing it.
Yep.
My flatbed truck is quite high, so I'm sitting above everybody else. The amount of people I see texting and using various devices, even tablets and stuff, is just amazing.
It's
scary.
It's very scary.
Yeah.
My kids are vigilant about it. I don't text and drive, but oftentimes I'll play music through the system.
Right.
And even if I pick the phone up,
yep,
just not looking at it, just pick it up to move it, they'll say, don't text and drive.
I get the same thing. So those are good warnings.
Good. The propaganda's working.
Exactly.
Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551, if you have a question for Gordon or Hannah today. Let's go to Deirdre in Hudson. You're on.
Hi there, guys.
Hi.
And Hannah. Listen, Hannah, I hope your father teaches you how to fix cars, because it's a great thing to know how to do. I'm calling with a question about a full-size truck. My husband needs a new full-size truck for work. He does construction. He has it down to a GMC or a Ford F-150, which he currently owns. And I'm wondering if you could give any pros and cons to each one of them. He had transmission problems with one of the Fords, but I hear that they fixed that now. And their aluminum body, which is good. So.
Yeah. Yeah,
what say you about trucks?
Yeah, that's a good question. And some of it comes down to brand loyalty and what vehicle he or the prospective buyer fits the best in and has the features that he needs. But, you know, they're competing head-to-head like crazy for these trucks. So, yes, the F-150 is aluminum, so the vehicle is lighter. It gets proposed better gas mileage. Can tow a little bit more because the truck weighs less. I don't know yet if there's implications on crashing all that aluminum and its repair costs. I don't think insurance rates have gone up, but if it costs more to repair a vehicle, the insurance company, the insurance industry will catch up with that trend and maybe add a little bit to the premiums, but I don't think that's happening, so I don't think I'd be concerned about that.
So aluminum would theoretically be a softer metal?
Well, it's not. It is softer, but it has greater strength per weight, and aluminum is being more widely used in a lot of vehicles. Audi started doing it about 20 years ago or more. So it's definitely a good feature, and the corrosion issue is almost non-existent. So as far as the two trucks, because they're competing head-to-head, I think I would not pick one for you. I would say sample both vehicles and look up the specs and what you need them to do and drive them, and I don't think you're going to make a bad choice either way.
Well, I like what you said about the insurance, so maybe he might just get a quote on both of them and see if there is a difference.
I would do that, although I don't want to throw any alarm bells up, but that is a potential possibility, so it'd be worth checking.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate that inside information. Okay.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. You did that very diplomatically, and from our legal department, we appreciate that very much.
So I didn't sell either one of those. I gave GM and Ford both a fighting chance here.
You know what? That was very good of you. Yeah. Let's go to Martha in, where are you calling from, Martha?
Boyceville.
Ah, Boyceville. I can see that. There it is. Well, you're on the air.
Okay, cool. I have a leased car, a Toyota RAV4, and I bring it in for the 20,000-mile checkup, and they call and say, your tires are wearing really unevenly. They're down way in a dangerous level, and you need an alignment. They'll give me two tires for free and the alignment for $100 or $200. I don't know. So my husband, who's a car guy, says, no, don't. We weren't here. So when we got back that night, my husband looked at the tires, and he said, that's simply not true. Then I had to go to Albany the other day, so I drove up from Saugerties to Albany on the thruway, maybe 80 miles an hour, took my hand off the steering wheel, hit the brake, the car is driving straight as can be. I call Toyota and tell them, and they say, no, your tires were down to 3 and 3/30 seconds. So I bring it to a friend of mine who's a mechanic, and he measures it, and it's 5 and 6/30 seconds. 5/30 seconds or 6/30 seconds. There's no place on the tire that it reads 3/30 seconds.
Well. That's
what should I do? I have an appointment with Toyota tomorrow because I was so angry that I went to social media because they wouldn't answer me. So I put it on social media, and 6 minutes later, the GM called me.
Oh, yeah. How about
but
that?
I want to do the right thing. If they're right, they're right. But, you know, I asked my mechanic friend if it's possible that his thing is reading it wrong, and he said, that, you know, this isn't rocket science. You put this thing in, it tells you how deep your tread is.
Exactly.
So what's going on?
Well, tires are not lasting like they used to, or some of the tire manufacturers claim they will. You know, if the tire says this is a 50,000-mile tire or 60,000-mile tire, it'll almost never achieve that kind of mileage. 20,000 is a little low to be needing tires, although I have witnessed it many times on new cars that may not have the longest wearing tire equipped from the factory. But your guy said it correctly. It's really not a very technical procedure to measure that tread depth. It's like a little device that pokes in there, and you make sure you're at the right spot of the tire, and you want to measure it a few different areas in the tire.
So maybe there's one spot.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe let's say, for example, the insides of the front tires, where that car might be experiencing more wear, they very well could be down to 3/30 seconds, and the outside could be.
We did inside, outside. We really did every tread on the tire.
Yeah. Then take it to the dealer and let them take a measurement and give you advice. If they still have 5 and 6/30 seconds, you don't need tires.
Well, they said 3.
Well, the one shop said 3, okay. But I think somebody gave her measurement, said they couldn't find anything lower than, 5?
Yeah. Well, there you go. Martha, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. All right, let's get another one in before the first break. Nancy in Amsterdam. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. I have a question. I've owned two G
GM product, a Sonoma truck and an S10 truck, and they both seem to have an electrical issue. When the truck sits for a while, the battery's dead, and it just seems like too big a coincidence that they both had, you know, poor batteries or poor alternators or something like that. So the first truck I had a plow on, and I thought the plow was creating a draw, one of the reasons I replaced it. But the second truck does exactly the same thing. If I let it sit for a few days, I can't start it. And sometimes I can start it at my house, drive it to the store, park it, come back out, and it won't start again.
Okay.
So, yeah. Any ideas? Is that a common problem with this GM model? Or
well, parasitic current draw is becoming more and more of an issue because vehicles have more things on them now, more computer modules.
They're on all the time.
Yeah, they need to be kept alive. And
these are pretty old trucks. One was a 2000 and one's an 02.
Yeah, I mean, they still had...
I don't keep any phones charged or plugged in. I don't leave any of that stuff in it.
Yeah. Alternator?
Vehicles that age do have some draws, but nothing like current model cars do. How many days does it take before it won't start if it's not touched? More than 3 or 4? Do you let it sit longer than that?
Well, I definitely let it sit longer than that, but it could be the very next day. And as I said, I could sometimes drive it from my house to store, and when I come out of the store, it won't start.
Yeah, that's more than just a parasitic current draw. So you must have a component that's periodically coming on unknowingly and drawing you down. And unfortunately, it's got to go in for testing.
Okay, Nancy, thank you so much for the call. We got to take a break here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Yeah, it's Gordon Fricke Day here on Vox Pop. We'll be back.
Support comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. Fulton County Tourism in the Southern Adirondack Park. 44 lakes, 44 choices. Hiking, fishing, art, history, and more. May calendar at 44lakes.com. Empire State Youth Orchestras, presenting Music Without Borders, a celebration and concert, featuring the debut of Chime, a musical program dedicated to underprivileged youth, Palace Theater this Saturday, esyo.org. And Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant and raw bar, realseafoodco.com.
Hello again. It's Vox Pop. It is, well, gosh, it's a car day today. Gordon Fricke is here with Ray Graff and Hannah Fricke here as well. Nice to have you on the program. Are you enjoying yourself?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
You really haven't said a lot.
I'm a girl of few words.
Okay. All right. I'll buy that.
There may be a stray question or two coming up. You never know.
What are these kids listening to in the car when they're driving around?
Yeah, or what kind of car do kids that age have interest in?
Yeah. What's your favorite car?
I want an Audi Q3.
No!
That's
you better keep working, Gordon.
That's my dream car.
Right. There's no point in starting out with like a Ford Escort or something, right?
That's, you know, it's a good point.
Yeah.
Let's see. This one came in via email from Stephen in Middletown. I have a 2012 Fiat 500 Sport, and the mechanic said the rear tires need to be replaced because they are chopped. What does this mean and what causes it?
Yeah, it's another common issue when we talk tires. The rear tires, it seems like more on a light car like that, that's, of course, front-wheel drive. The rear, there's not much weight on the back of the car, and the tires can develop this pattern where the tread gets choppy. And it's like high spots, and then the next little tread is deep, is low, and then it comes high again. And they get noisy.
Yeah.
And the noise creeps up on you. So it doesn't happen all at once. But if somebody else gets in the car and says, wow, you got some roaring going on back here, it is sometimes it's the tire versus car aren't compatible. Some cars just don't like certain tires. It's just, and they don't wear properly. They need to be rotated very regularly to prevent that from happening. And alignment needs to be checked because even a young car with low mileage can have an alignment issue.
You hit a curb or whatever.
Yeah, or it can even leave the factory and not be perfectly in spec.
Well, that's bad.
So, yeah, rotate, alignment, and choice of tire.
All right, let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Bob in lovely Danbury, Connecticut. Bob, you're on.
Good afternoon. I have a question about a Saturn Sky. I'm thinking of purchasing a Saturn Sky, which is like a – there are various models out there, and you they either come with a 2.0 turbo or 4.0 or 2.4 standard fuel injection engine. I'm wondering which engine is better. Is the turbo prone to breaking down or anything like that?
Do they still make Saturns?
No,
they don't make them anymore.
Okay,
but they were a good car.
Yeah,
they really were, and they just got they got dragged down with GM's issue in the 2008-2009 era when leasing and the car industry was in terrible shape.
Yeah,
but that model, a turbocharger adds power to the engine and still allows it to be driven easily to get good fuel economy. So it's the best of both worlds in that sense. But
yeah,
it adds complexity. There's more moving parts, and there's a turbocharger, which adds some stresses to the engine and has a whole bunch more components that go with it. So long term, if you are going to potentially have trouble, the more complicated system is going to develop them. So if you don't need the turbocharger in terms of power or to be able to say you got a turbo, get the non-turbo version, and it's a little bit more basic and less things that potentially could fail.
Is there any difference between the stick version, the stick, or the automatic?
As far as the car itself?
Longevity or maintenance and breaking down?
It used to be that the manual transmissions would last virtually forever as long as you were good with the clutch.
Uh-huh.
And if you were not good with the clutch and went through a couple of them, it could be very expensive.
A clutch should get you 80,000 miles every time, right?
A clutch could last the life of the vehicle under the right person, under the correct left foot.
I only got 80,000 out of mine every
time. That's not too bad.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've had a
standard. But they're kind of an individual thing, just like brakes. You could take two cars with two different people. And the first car, the brakes are gone at 30,000. The next car, they're gone at 45,000.
Yeah.
It's the driving style.
Right.
So I don't know if I could steer you one way or the other on the automatic versus the standard. I would get the one that you like the most because it's kind of a fun car.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. I would always go with a stick shift if I had the option.
Personally, I would because I like to drive. I like to shift. I like to, I'm a car guy.
And you go faster.
Well, there's some really good automatics nowadays.
Yeah.
Seven speeds, six speeds.
Well, what's with the paddle shift? I've never had a car that was that expensive. I'm sure the Audi Q3 you'll get for your daughter has the paddle shift.
If it doesn't, it's going to have it put
in. So what is that?
No, it's a way of shifting the automatic transmission up or down kind of when you want to, within parameters.
So is it just a pretend thing?
Well,
oh, look at me, I'm shifting.
Porsche developed this thing in the 90s. They called it Tiptronic. So you could take an automatic and, quote, manually shift it. Well, you really weren't manually shifting it, but it allowed you to go up and down the speeds the way you desired within certain restrictions. You can't over rev it. You can't shift it too many times.
So you couldn't be going 70 and throw it into second.
Exactly. There are all kinds of safeguards built in there.
But I think a buddy of mine had a Porsche that had one. That's why I knew about it.
The Porsches, the newer Porsches, though, their automatics with the paddle shifters are more real shifting than
requiring some skill.
Not skill, but they really respond and they're more of the real deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551. Lee in Lakeville. Lee, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I've got a 1999 Jeep Cherokee Laredo. It's got over 200,000 miles on it. And what happens is in the morning when they go to start it, it'll start right up. Everything's fine. And then all of a sudden it starts to break up. Like blah, 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 blah. And then it stays like that. If I shut the key off and then turn it back on again, it clears right up immediately. So I was thinking maybe it could be the fuel pump might be bad, or
what would happen if you didn't shut it off? Would it stall, or would it just run terribly for another 30 seconds or a minute and then clear?
It would run for next minute, badly. It would just, like, it's breaking up, like it's not getting fuel.
And then it would clear up on its own?
Yeah, I'd shut the key off, and then, boom, immediately it comes right back, and everything's fine.
This is what's possible, and it happens a lot, particularly on higher mileage engines. And we talk about this probably every show. Deposits build up on the valves, particularly the intake valves, the combustion chambers on the pistons, and on the fuel injectors. And those deposits are noticeable a lot of times at cold start when the car, when the engine needs enrichment. It needs a lot of extra fuel versus air. And if the valves are covered with this deposit, they'll soak up the extra gas. It won't reach the engine the way it should, and it'll run terrible until it warms up. So I've got to be careful endorsing products, but we've mentioned the Tekron name so many times that I guess we can just do it. But
there are others out there that are comparable.
Yes, there
Tekron
are.
Is the
I've
one.
Heard that. I've heard that that's a pretty good additive.
It is.
Textron?
Tekron. Get the big one, the 20-ounce jug, and follow the instructions and maybe do two in a row and just see if that solves the problem. It may very well.
All right, cool.
Thanks a lot, Lee. We appreciate it. Now, you know, we've talked about Tekron for years, and you've advised me about that for years. I was in the shop, in the store not too long ago. I ended up getting a high-end STP product, did the same thing, worked great.
Yeah, I mean,
on
I'm
both vehicles.
I think the chemistry is probably very similar, and I'm sure there are others that do the same job.
Yeah.
My experience with this stuff goes back to the 80s, so, you know, I'm loyal.
It's a real eye-opener, though, if you have not done that and you try one of these fuel system cleaners. It's quite amazing.
They work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go to Eric in Clifton Park. Eric, you're on.
Hi, yeah. Thanks for taking my call. I just got a safety inspection done on my car, and they said I had to get new tires. So, sure. Got new tires, and I noticed when I took the foam, or actually not long after I pulled out of the parking lot, actually, there's a somewhat of a grinding when I was putting it in reverse. So I drive a standard Mazda 6 2005. And I just wondered what it might be. I kind of plan on taking it back and everything, but I just, you know, I kind of expected new tires to be a little smoother, you know.
Yeah, do it soon. Bring it back soon.
Is it like a scraping sound, like a metal sound?
Yeah, you know, it's sort of reminiscent of. It just feels, you know, the best I can say is it feels just like friction, and, it, you know, it's noticeable to I can hear it.
This is what very likely could have happened. When you take the wheels on and off, the disc brakes have these metal shields that kind of protect the backsides, and it's not too difficult to, when you put the wheel on, to hit that shield, and it may have tweaked it and pushed it in closer to the brake disc, and you're hearing that scrape, or some rust or some flakes of junk got between the brake disc and that shield, and that's what you're hearing. I would bet that's all it is.
They'll probably take care of that.
Oh, absolutely. It may even go away if it's a little.
Well, I wondered that if I just had to drive through, or my biggest fear was that it was the wrong size tire, you know.
What I would recommend, and I do this to all the cars we take wheels off of, and your shop may or may not have recommended this, but get the wheels retorqued after about 50 miles or so. That's just to assure that the lug nuts are all at the correct tightness, so you don't lose a wheel.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Eric, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Ray in Del Mar. Ray, you're on.
Yeah, I have a Ford F-250 2005, and when I try to fill the gas tank, sometimes it'll take it, but then most of the times it'll keep kicking the pump off. I go very, very slow with it, and it'll start taking it, and then it'll kick it back off.
Yeah.
Where do I look for the problem?
Is your check engine light on?
No.
It isn't. Okay. There's valving in gas tanks that allows the air to come out when the gasoline goes in.
Right.
And those valves can stick shut, and then you get all this trouble putting gas in.
Right.
Oftentimes you'll get a check engine light indicating a tank vent issue, and that will be a two-part thing.
Right. Now, how many different valves are there? I noticed there was one way in the back, looked like an air little box in the back.
Yeah.
Of the vehicle. And then is there ones up front too?
Yeah. There's the ones up front, I don't think, are going to be the issue in the tank filling part of it. It's going to be the one towards the back that.
In a small square box?
Well, when you say small, what are you thinking? Like five, six inches by three inches? Yeah, that's the vapor canister, the charcoal canister. And that all works together to get these vapors out.
Okay.
I wouldn't just go changing it without maybe having it checked, but it could be that valve in the back.
An expensive part?
Not really. The issue back there could be plugged up vent hose. Mud could have gotten in there, not this time of the year, but if it's one of the vents, you can get those mud bees in there, and they'll build the thing shut. You know, they'll go in there and seal it off on you.
Yeah.
Now, does that cap come off of that, or do you have to buy the whole unit, or what?
No, the valves are separate. The canister vent valve is separate from the canister. Sometimes they get kind of corroded or stuck together, but I wouldn't just start replacing those things unless you want to experiment, and then just replace the canister vent valve and see what that does for you.
All right, and that's the one that goes into the canister?
Yeah, it's back on the canister. If you got an illustration, you probably might be able to get online and see what it looks like back there. Then you'll be able to identify what you're working with.
All right.
Thanks a lot for the call.
You think the one in the back, you think, would be the main
culprit? Yeah, because the one up front draws the vapors in to get burned up, and those aren't responsible for letting the air out when you gas up.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. Okay, this is one of those situations where old man Ray complains about cars being too complicated. Why? Is it a safety reason that we have this valve?
No.
Why?
Emissions.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
It's to keep the hydrocarbons from evaporating out of your gas tank into the atmosphere.
Okay.
And there are millions and millions of cars out there, so I guess it's good to capture the stuff.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll go along with you on that. Paul in Clifton Park. Paul, you're on.
Yes, thank you. We have a 2015 Ford Fusion plug-in energy model. We run it on all electric most of the time. We get about 20 miles all electric. The car has 5,000 miles on it in a year and a half. And just wondering about the frequency of the oil change. We probably only have about 2,000 miles of gasoline engine running in that year and a half.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Most car manufacturers recommend it once a year, regardless of mileage, unless it's literally 5 miles. Because that engine has started and shut off a bunch of times, and you've gotten a couple of thousand miles, did you say, on it, you think?
Of gasoline running, about 5,000 total.
So has the oil been changed yet?
No.
And you have how many miles on the car total?
Has 5,000.
Okay.
Probably about 2,000 of running a gasoline only.
Okay. Yeah. Have you removed the dipstick and looked at the engine oil?
I have. It looks pretty nice and clean.
Yeah. I would lean towards doing it, because you've gone this long. What is one oil change? You know, it's not going to be that big of a deal expense-wise. And I think if you talk to Ford, I think they might say do it once a year, unless the miles are so ridiculously low.
Okay.
So I think that's what I would do.
Okay, so a Ford Fusion, he said it's an all-electric, but it has a gas engine.
Yes.
How can that be?
Well, I guess it's...
you can run it straight electric?
It sounds like it's a hybrid, but it's more of a electric versus the gas part of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly how that vehicle is set up.
That's a cool idea, though.
If you
could run it electric until if you're out in the middle of nowhere.
You got the engine.
Kick the gas on.
Exactly. It gives you a little more control over where the hybrid is. The engine's coming on and off when the computer deems that it should.
Right.
Where this car, you switch it.
I bet it has an automatic setting as well.
Yeah, when it reaches a fail-safe point.
All right, so this one came in from Mark via email. In the old days, backyard mechanics would regularly add water to both the battery and the radiator. Is this still a necessary practice in 2016?
Well, that's interesting. Well,
batteries now.
Batteries, no, they're maintenance free. That doesn't mean they're not vented. You can't actually pry the caps off and look in there. You can. They're all, most of them, you could do that if you wanted to. The maintenance free battery, all they did is they made more room for more liquid. So by the time the water has evaporated and the level has gone down to the point where it should be topped up, by that time, usually the battery's done anyway, because that's 3, 4, 5 years.
Right.
As for the quote water, cooling systems will evaporate some coolant off over the course of a year, and they need to be topped up. Usually they don't need a lot, but the reservoir on the outside has a high mark and a low mark.
Right.
So dead cold in the morning, it needs to be at the minimum, and fully warmed up after you've been driving it, it wants to be close to the top.
But you don't want to open the thing when it's fully warmed up.
The tank on the outside is not pressurized.
Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah.
But the liquid in the radiator should be checked once in a while, and you're absolutely right, Ray. Dead cold. You don't want to open that up hot.
It's a bad mistake.
Spray hot coolant all over you.
Yep. All right, the number to call here is 800-348-2551. Our guest is Gordon Fricke. We talk automotive maintenance and repair every month or so, and today is the big day. We'll be back with the home stretch in a moment.
Support comes from the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, educating children pre-K through grade 12 and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning. WaldorfSaratoga.org. Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans, hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons, grapesandgrainswine.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Rembrandt, the consummate etcher, and other 17th century printmakers. More on Facebook and at arkellmuseum.org. The Ashokan Center, presenting a uke extravaganza featuring 6 ukulele soloists playing jazz, Hawaiian folk, blues, and rock on Saturday, May 28th at 8 p.m., where nature inspires. AshokanCenter.org. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their updated website with more information about membership, grants, and loans, so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Nice to have you with us this afternoon. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And before we get back to the phones, Gordon, this one from Nancy in Wilton came in via email. It's rather long,
oh
so
boy.
Get ready. Pull up a chair. We've been driving the 1997-1998 Jeep Grand Cherokee Sport for years and years and love them. We are now facing a large investment to repair the current Jeep. We have 179,000 miles with no engine trouble. Do you believe we should purchase another older Jeep that has lower miles and is in excellent shape, no rust? Average costs for these are around $2,800. Or should we invest another $500 in our current 97 with lots of rust? The old wives' tale is that these Jeeps can run into the 200,000-mile range or more with no engine troubles, and that's from Nancy in Wilton.
Yeah, no, those were and are very, very durable, nice long-life vehicles.
Yeah.
If they can find one that's really not rusty with lower miles for, what were we talking,
$2,800?
That's not a lot of money for good transportation. Yeah. If the vehicle is as good as it sounds. It's getting old, so you got to really be careful and check this thing
age
over.
Age can do awful things to suspensions and bearings and ball joints and everything else.
It's not always the best thing to have a super low mileage car that's, let's say, 20 years old, because it did a lot of sitting around, a lot of starting and stopping. So, on the other hand, having 300,000 on that same car is not good either. But I think if I were her, I would carefully look at that replacement vehicle, because if the old one needs $500 worth of work and it's really rusty, it's very possible that that $500 worth of work may really turn into six or seven, you know, when you find other stuff along the way.
Okay.
But yeah, those are good cars.
All right, let's go to George in Hillsdale. George, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hey, Gordon, how you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
Good, thanks. One of the big problems in New England, probably most anywhere else, is that people don't remember to clean their terminals, the battery terminals. It has to be done in the spring and the fall. And there's a little tool that you can use with a brush, and you turn it off, and you know, you take the oxidation off.
Yeah.
And then you put some dielectric grease on it and put your terminals back on, and you're good to go. It's a sort of a lost art. People, the battery runs out, and they say, well, oh, I got to take it to the garage, which you don't really have to do. You just have to do maintenance on it. Replacing struts. I've got 100,000 miles on Dodge Caravans. And the one thing I found from brand new when I would buy them, they get 50,000 miles pretty good. But I run cars out a long ways. So I wound up putting in heavier duty struts and shocks in these Caravans, and what a difference it makes.
Excellent.
Aluminum bodies, great. As long as you don't come any further up than North Carolina.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. I don't think aluminum bodies are going to do well in New England, and I think people are going to be pretty upset about it.
Corrosion, so, you mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All it's going to take is some pebbles hitting the underside of that body where it's painted, and pretty soon it'll probably corrode quicker than metal does.
Huh. Okay. Well, how about titanium? Soft, but very strong, right?
Yeah, kind of expensive, though.
Oh, I think I'll get a titanium.
But we're not building space shuttles and spacecraft much anymore, so there must be some leftover titanium
somewhere, right? Well, and DeLorean used the stainless steel, right?
He used stainless steel,
yeah. That'd be nice, too.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know what, Hannah? Maybe a DeLorean for you, you know?
I was almost able to buy one a few years ago.
I know.
And I choked on it.
Your daughter could be driving it today, and her friends could say, what is that?
That would be cool.
That would be great. Let's go to Fred in Hurley. Fred.
Hi, Ray. Hi, I'm sorry. I'm Gordon.
Hi.
This has happened to me 4 to 5 times, probably in the last 2 years. I have a 2005 Grand Cherokee Laredo, Jeep Cherokee Laredo. It's not a Grand. Maybe it is. When I'm driving north on the thruway out of New York, coming up here, it only seems to happen when I'm driving north. It hasn't happened when I'm heading into the city. When I'm, like, if I stop halfway through to stop at one of the rest stops or that kind of thing, and then I'm reentering traffic, and especially if it's busy, you've got to, like, speed up pretty quick and all that, and it gets stuck when it tacks up on 4. And when it gets between 3 and 4, mostly to the 4 side. And so I'm wondering what I should be thinking about that. The first time it happened, my immediate response was to pull over immediately, turn the engine off, and I started it back up and got back on the road, and it went back to normal. And, you know, it downshifted, as it were. And so, and that's what I do now whenever it has happened again. So do you have any ideas on that?
So the tachometer sticks?
What are you feeling, that it won't shift any higher and the engine's just racing at 4,000 and you're not really speeding up much anymore?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, please?
Yeah, the symptoms are, is it that the tach needle is stuck at 4 or the engine is racing at 4,000 RPMs and you're not going
in? The engine is racing.
So it's not going into the next gear.
Yeah, it's not cutting back. Yeah,
I better check that out.
How many miles are on it?
About $130.
Yeah. Check engine light on.
Never.
Okay.
In the same instance.
Without experiencing this, what you may be explaining is that it's not shifting up to the next gear at times, and it's sticking in, let's say, second or third, and not making it to the highest gear. And then when you pull over, stop, shut everything off, it kind of gives things a bit of a reboot, and then it maybe shifts back up properly.
So software?
It would be good to maybe get it in and get it scanned. Go into the transmission computer and just see if there's any history codes or anything going on in there causing it to not shift.
Now, would there be something that might trigger a code that wouldn't show up as a check engine light?
Yes, exactly. Sure. Oh. Yeah, there's a lot of codes that won't turn the check engine light on. Because the check engine light is primarily to warn you of a potential emissions problem. So there can be other problems that will never turn the light on.
Okay. Okay.
I think I'd get it scanned to see if there's any codes in there regarding that issue.
All right, Fred, thank you so much for the call. Over to Jonathan in Monroe. Jonathan, you're on.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
Good.
I got a 2000 Chevy Camaro Super Sport convertible. Love this car. Unfortunately, with a family and all the other responsibilities of life, I barely get it out anymore, but it stays in the garage. It's under a car cover. It totally gets baby. I got about 40,000 original miles on this thing. Unfortunately, I only drive it literally about 150, maybe 160 miles a year. I put Mobil 1 synthetic in this beat. And every time I think, all right, maybe I should just go and change the oil or check it out, I look at it or I actually have changed the oil, and it looks as good as it looked when I put it in the last time.
Yeah.
So what's the longest time you would keep Mobil 1 in a car for before without changing it?
Yeah, we had a caller earlier talking about the need to change oil on very low miles. If you're really only putting 150, 200 miles on it, that oil is not breaking down or taking on really any contamination. So you don't really need to change it every year, maybe every couple of years. You're good there if you're really not putting in any miles. And you don't start it up, let it idle, and shut it off throughout the year. You just don't use it, right?
Oh, I might have.
You may be gone.
I think I did a bad thing.
Yeah. The only thing I would recommend is a lot of people think that it's good to start a car up, let it idle in the yard 5 minutes and shut it off. That's bad for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. This one came in via email from somebody named Ray. I am selling my car and the battery is dead. Is there a way or place I can buy a semi-used one instead of buying a brand new one for a car I'm getting rid of anyway?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can buy a semi-used.
Yeah, salvage yard or the old days were called junk yards. But I think a salvage yard would sell you a used battery.
All right, the part two of this is the car is a 2001 Oldsmobile Aurora 4.0
wow.
with a Northstar engine and transmission fully loaded. I'd love to hear what Gordon's opinion of this car is. Collectability, quality, discuss.
It was kind of an interesting car. You remember what they looked like, Ray?
Not at all.
It was a long, sleek car with a kind of a tapering back end. It had that Northstar V8, which you've experienced a few of those.
Yeah, until the head gasket
goes. They were good, they were good.
Yeah.
It had lots of power. Collectability, you probably will see them at car shows. I don't know if they have any real value other than, you know, modes of transportation at this point, but I don't think they were a bad car. I didn't see that many of them, but I know what they look like. We had one in the area I used to service.
Speaking of cars you don't see much, now I got the car for you, Hannah. Plymouth Prowler.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, that'd be perfect for her, right?
How about a Buick Riviera?
No.
That's nice. Oh. Speaking of that, you know, you like muscle cars, right?
Yeah.
So have you seen the ads? I haven't seen one in person for the Challenger.
You mean the latest ads?
Yeah. That looks like a real throwback.
Well, that retro car.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's been out since 2009.
Okay. Well, so. I don't.
But yeah, it's a cool car because it really looks like the old Challenger.
Does it drive like the old Challenger?
No, way better.
Really?
And now the true 60s and 70s muscle car people may disagree, but cars like that Challenger, current Mustangs, current Camaros, they've got everything over those muscle cars in terms of comfort, handling, braking. And lots of power nowadays.
Yeah.
So they're phenomenal.
All right. Well, maybe that's what we'll get for Hannah. Alan in Springfield, Mass. Alan, you're on.
Yeah, how are you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a 2005 Tucson Hyundai. It's got 246,000 miles on it. I've done everything to this car for emissions, everything else. The thing of it is, when I run it a whole lot, it starts to bog down. I was thinking maybe with the GR something valve. I was thinking maybe that was what, you know, causing it to bog out.
You're probably referring to an EGR valve.
There you go.
Yeah. If the kind of the good thing about modern cars is that the infamous check engine light is also a good thing, because if there's an area of trouble developing and it turns the light on, it'll lead the technician into the area of problem. It doesn't tell you replace this end of problem, but it'll give you the right direction to go. So if you had an EGR valve problem, you'd be getting a check engine light leading to that possible cause.
This thing here, it was like five codes. I can't remember what they were, but it didn't seem to say anything about that. How about those emission things on the exhaust here, which I can't think of the name of the little things you sit at? You got one on each side of it.
Oxygen sensors?
Yeah.
Well, you see, you can guess a lot of components nowadays and be wrong a lot of times.
You got to find the codes.
Yeah, the codes need to be extracted, and then you need to carry out a diagnostic path from those codes, and that will lead somebody in the right direction.
Let's go to Dave in Del Mar. Dave, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a 1990 Miata, 180,000 miles on it. Developed an oil leak. Took it in someplace. They said it looks like the rear main seal. You have to drop the entire transmission. It's a big job for the car. Not sure it's worth it. I'm wondering whether these additives that they sell to repair seal leaks that you add to the oil, do they work, and can they do any harm to the car?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not all witchcraft. I mean, there is some basis to those additives, and what they're designed to do is to revitalize a seal that maybe has gotten hard and is letting a little oil get by. The rear main is a tough one because the transmission has to come out in the case of your car, any car. What I always caution people on is when you see a leak, keep looking up and look up to the very top of the engine to make sure you don't have a leak at the top that's running down and mimicking a lower,
much more expensive
a
problem.
Lower leak.
Yeah.
Like a lot of guys will say, looks like the oil pan gasket's leaking. It very well could be, but it could be a leak from up above that leaks down to it, and then it runs around the oil pan, and you think that the gasket's gone when it's a higher up leak.
Mm.
So be careful of the valve cover gasket or anything above that. But yes, you can use those additives. They're not harmful. Just don't overdo it, you know.
Or else bad things happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't want to put 10 cans of the stuff in a little engine like that. I'd follow the directions and try one.
All right. Let's go to Aaron in Lenox, Massachusetts. Aaron, you're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I am the proud, I guess, owner of a 2000 Chevy Malibu.
Well, all right.
And sometimes when I am in drive and I come to a stop or I'm in traffic, the car starts to pulse and it makes a kind of noise, and the entire car is shaking. And I put it into reverse or neutral, and the car stops shaking. And I was just wondering if you had any insight into that.
So this is after you've come to a stop?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, this isn't during the braking. You're already stopped now.
Correct.
And now the engine surges.
Yes.
You feel it raise up and go down, and it doesn't stabilize?
Right.
Do you see that? Do you see the tachometer needle going up and down along with those engine oscillations?
No, I've never noticed that.
Okay. If the engine is really slightly revving up and down, and what year is the car again?
2000.
2000, okay. That's probably has a throttle-by-wire. So I would start with a throttle plate cleaning, a throttle body cleaning. Make sure there's no carbon or deposits that's keeping that plate from sticking a little bit.
Okay.
Tekron in the gas. And if you're going to do this yourself, I don't know how much stuff you can or want to do, or if you're going to take it somewhere. But it's always good to read out any trouble codes in the computer just to see if there's anything lurking in there that's not turning on the check engine light. But mm-hmm. I think maybe the engine is not coming to a stable idle when you come to a stop like that.
Okay, thanks. So it's not something to worry about?
I don't think so. I don't think you're into a transmission issue or anything like that, but it would be good to get it checked.
At least check the codes.
Check the codes, okay. and also check the transmission fluid just to be sure you're okay there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. We'll have to leave it there. Gordon Fricke, well done, sir.
Thank you.
Your daughter did marginally well as well.
It was moral support sitting right behind me.
Very nice. And have a great summer, Hannah. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Support comes from Saratoga Chamber Players, bringing musicians together from Europe, Asia, Canada, and the U.S. since 1987 with a concert May 29th at 3 p.m. at the United Methodist Church, saratogachamberplayers.org. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting Certified Seed Collector Training starting May 24th collect native plant seed for habitat restoration at the preserve, AlbanyPineBush.org. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. And Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services, including legal publishing and corporate record searches, colbyservice.com. Don't forget the lockbox is in operation at WAMC.org. Make your pledge now. Every dollar we raise will shorten the June Fund Drive, which begins on Monday, June 6th. Again, thanks to Gordon Fricke. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Deb Malik. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's another Food Friday. Stand by for news.